Hey, this is Gary Cerrone from Hurt Smile and Extreme.
And you're listening to Iron City Rocks.
Hi, this is Lita Ford. You're listening to Iron City Rocks.
Hey, everybody, this is Gary Hoey, and you are hanging with my friend John on Iron City Rocks.
Welcome to episode 536 of the Iron City Rocks podcast. I'm your host, John, coming to you from the Iron City of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, bringing the best rock, hard rock, heavy metal, and blues talk on the net. Episode 536, we have two artists joining us who are both coming into Pittsburgh to do shows on Friday, July 26th. We have joining us in just a little while, for at least the third time, if my memory serves me correct, maybe more, Mr. Gary Hoey will be joining us to talk about his show, which will be at the Lamb Theater in Irwin. But joining us first off on the show, celebrating the album that really changed their lives, Matt Scannell of the band Vertical Horizon, who will be doing a show at South Park Amphitheater. That is a free show to the public, so you want to get there early so you can actually get yourself a seat. They're doing a tour with the Gin Blossoms and Toad the Wet Sprocket, but they're doing kind of a one-off thing here in Pittsburgh for the Allegheny Parks concert series, so it'll be a great evening to get out there. The weather should be fantastic. Pirates, I believe, are out of town, so good reason to come out to a show. Talking about the album, this is a special anniversary of the album, Everything You Want, which was number one on the Billboard Top 100. It was number one on the Billboard Adult Top 40 chart. It was the most played single of the year 2000. So here we are celebrating the what would be the 25th release years since that album came out. So the album that really changed everything for Matt and then the guys in the band. So it was really interesting to get a chance to kind of pick his brain about how the song Everything You Want just really was such a game changer for their career. So sat down with Matt. We're going to play you a little bit of that song in case you happen to forget it somehow. And we'll get an interview with Matt Scannell.
Somewhere there's speaking, it's already coming in. Oh, and it's rising at the back of your mind. You never could get in unless you were fed in. Now you're here and you don't know why. But under skin knees and the skid marks, past the places where you used to learn, you howl and listen, listen and wait for the echoes of angels who won't return. He's everything you want, he's everything you need, he's everything inside of you that you wish you could be. He says all the right things at exactly the right time, but he means nothing to you when you don't.
pleasure to welcome from Vertical Rising, we have Matt Scannell on the line. How are you doing, Matt?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I am fantastic. A pleasure to get a chance to talk to you. You guys are rolling in to do part of the Allegheny Parks Summer Concert Series here on July 26th. And it also coincides with a pretty big milestone for you guys, the 25th anniversary of, you know, the massive album, the album that I think everybody thinks of when they think of Vertical Horizon, Everything You Want.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about, you know, do you ever contemplate, like, what your career would have been like had you not, you know, written that album and quite honestly, the title track? You know, which was like, it's kind of your Don't Stop Believing
right
kind of thing. You know, it's a song you probably some nights you'd prefer not to have to play, but, you know, it's the reason for the season sort of thing. Can you just talk a little?
Well, I'd have to give me at least the chance to correct you on that. And only in regards to the fact that I am so lucky to love that song as mm-hmm. much as I do. You know, I learned early on in my career that if you don't love something, don't put it on a record.
Yeah.
And so fortunately, I have a really great relationship with that song and all the songs on Everything You Want. So no, there are no nights when I'll, you know, be grumpy about playing Everything You Want. If people want to hear it, I want to play it.
That's a good attitude. But when you play it, does it take you to kind of, you know, obviously it's kind of a personal story. Is that something that you kind of separate, you know, and almost fictionalize at this point, or do you still kind of takes you to where you were when you wrote it?
Yeah, that's a really good question. It does take me back to where I was when I wrote it. I think the other thing that's happened, though, is I've had so many other experiences over the years now as a result of that song and playing that song that I do think about the original sort of impetus for the song, but I also think about this crazy journey that this song has brought me on. And to circle back to your original question of what would it be like if we hadn't written, you know, if we hadn't recorded that record and if I hadn't written that song, I mean, you know, let's be blunt. You and I are probably not talking mm-hmm. today. We certainly don't have the sort of flourishing life out there on the road that we have now. And I mean, it's entirely possible that I would be doing something completely different with my life. But this was the only thing I ever wanted to do. It's the only thing that I ever really dreamt of doing. And so, you know, it's all really down to, yes, that song and a few others and that record specifically. So I'm just really grateful. I'm so thankful that we have that music and that mm-hmm. people have taken it into their hearts like they have.
When you wrote it, did you get a sense for the legs that it would develop? I mean, I think everybody gets invested in a song they write. You know, here's,
sure.
you know, I did this 10 minutes ago. Listen to this. You know, you're shouting for your loved one or whoever's, you know, around. Listen to
right.
this. This is the greatest thing I've ever written. But
right.
at any point did you get a sense prior to it exploding that it was going to explode? You know?
No. I you know, I guess there were a couple things. I was probably too close to all the songs on that record mm-hmm. that I wrote to really have any sort of idea about whether or not they could move some sort of needle out there in the real world. I will say this, I did know that moment towards the end of the song where there's the sort of reveal that, you know, where I switch pronouns from he's everything you want to I'm everything you want,
mm-hmm.
sort of shows that I'm actually the one who's in love with her and have been, you know, sort of pining for her,
right.
But she sort of thinks of me more as a friend, and that's not going to change. So, I did know that moment was a powerful moment. I knew that I felt something every time I played it. But then again, you know, you should be suspicious of your own reactions, because if you're not moved by the music you write, then you're probably not writing good enough music.
Right.
And then the question becomes, Will anybody else be moved by it? And fortunately, yeah, people were, which is amazing.
Yeah, you look at the lyrics and really kind of sit back and read them, and you think, you know, who hasn't been in that scenario? And that's one of the,
right.
I think, the universal themes. You know, I read this and I'm like, you know, if you really boil them both down, you're experiencing the same thing Biz Markie did with Just Friends. You know,
it's
you know, totally different way of going about it, but the theme is still there, and it's such a universal theme. And I think that that speaks to, you know, male, female, doesn't matter.
Right.
It doesn't matter. There's no bounds.
Which is pretty great, and it's culturalist as well, which is great. You know, I get people, you know, all over the world when we travel, telling me that song meant something to them, and you know, people, but very different stories. You know, a guy came up to me after a show not long ago and told me that song helped him get through his divorce, and that was sort of a new one for me. I hadn't heard that perspective on it, you know, so much as a relationship that never began. You know, that's what I hear the most. But it helped. He said it helped him get through that period of time. And you know, if music can help us heal, then it's such an incredible gift. I mean, we turn to all these other methods. You know. Mm-hmm. Medicines and you know, all these sort of scientific options, I guess, right. I'd say. And what an incredible thing that you can just put a piece of music on in your ears, and that somehow can help your body, your heart, your mind heal in some fashion. That's magic to me, you know.
Yeah, and that, like I said, you're going through something when you write this song, unless this was completely fictional on your part. That you think about people when they write songs, and you know, you're going through this and living this event, and you write this song, and then it speaks to somebody in a totally different place going through the same thing. And you know, it's kind of a beautiful thing. I think of, you know, like John Cusack with the Say Anything boombox. You know, this is really a great theme when you're putting the album together. Obviously, you know, you said you didn't necessarily think that song you stuck out. You guys released some other, you know, at least one other single, if I'm not mistaken, before that.
We released We Are first.
Was that a record company decision, or, you know, because that's an important thing. You know, this is kind of like your major label thing. I mean, obviously you guys had a bit of a following to that point, but for, you know, a lot of us, this was kind of the introduction to the band. Yeah. You know, can you talk about the process of deciding, you know, which song goes first? Do you get a say in that even at this point in your career?
Yeah, I mean, let's say this. We had a say in it, but we didn't really. We were blessed at the time with the sort of best case scenario as far as having a team is concerned. In the people that we had at RCA Records, and I can say that very confidently, because I also know what it's like to have a team that doesn't really believe in you and isn't really pulling for you, which is an experience I had with the subsequent record Go. But with Everything You Want, you know, all these people were rooting for us. They were absolutely 100% committed, and you know, when someone whose specialty it is to sort of tee up singles to radio is telling you, I think we should do this, this, and this, you know, they're not asking me sort of what kind of guitar, they think I should play. I'm pretty well informed as far as that kind of thing goes. Mm-hmm. So we were very happy to have the help to guide us on our journey. And fortunately at that time, our faith in them was sort of well placed.
Right.
I think there are many tragedies that occur when maybe people don't, you know, given people the ability to make decisions for them, and they don't deserve it, or they don't have maybe the best intentions or whatever. Mm-hmm. So they said, let's go with We Are, because we want to go with something a little bit heavier. We'll go with Everything You Want second, and we really think that could be something special. but we want to sort of set the stage with something that's a little bit more of a rock song. And then they knew after Everything You Want that they'd want to go with You're a God, and then finally with Best I Ever Had. And so that was, it was a nice journey, a nice strategy, and it, you know, for the most part, it really seemed to work.
Yeah, I think when you explain that, you know, you think about it, like if Everything You Want had been the first single, it really would have set, I think, you know, a lot of people's mind up about what the band sounded like. And I think of many, many artists, you know, to this day where I kind of cringe when I hear any of their songs because the first song I heard I didn't care for. You know, and it takes a lot to overcome that. So if you come out with, you know, obviously a big song, but, you know, I'm trying to remember exactly what musical trends were 25 years ago, but you know, something a little bit lighter is the first single, then people might go, okay, these are kind of like, you know, this is a softer Goo Goo Dolls kind of thing.
Sure.
But, you know, you come out with a bit of a rocker, then you go into that, and then you've got somewhere to go. You know, people are like, okay, they're not just a one-trick kind of adult contemporary sort of
an artist. And we did. It had a little bit more of a bare-knuckle feel, and it was kind of, kind of atmospheric and stuff in the verses and stuff. I don't know. I mean, look, the truth of the matter is I was psyched and ecstatic, frankly, to have any of our songs being played on the record. We had had a few experiences over the years with that, with some of the independent records that we had done before we was signed with RCA, but nothing like nothing whatsoever like it we experienced with Everything You Want.
Yeah. I mean, it was a cool time. It's kind of interesting to look back also, as you know, you were kind of in that last wave of rock bands to have full-on platinum albums based on sales.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, no, you're right.
You know, you can look at some really significant artists today that don't sell 2 million records. You know. You know, they're streamed a half a billion times, but not purchased.
Yeah.
So it was probably a great thing to happen when it did. One of the other things that I've always kind of curious about it, and this may be out there and I just never heard it, but you worked with Neil Peart during the Burning days. How did you kind of cross paths? You know, obviously you guys penned some songs together. He played, you know, some of the music on the record. But how did you end up, you know, kind of meeting each other?
Yeah, so he actually played on two of our records. He played on Burning the Days and on Echoes from the Underground. And on Burning the Days, we co-wrote a song called Even Now, which I think is just a really, really special piece of music, a really beautiful song. I have to say that even when I start talking about him, I get choked up because I miss him so dearly. He was like a big brother to me. He was my, you know, Rush is my favorite band, and he is my favorite lyricist and my favorite drummer. And yet somehow we sort of were able to navigate all of that sort of, you know, all those waters and get to a place of just real true friendship. I sort of making a long story shortish. My girlfriend in California at the time, she had a dear friend in Texas who owned a car dealership. He was selling a car to Neil, and Neil was selling him a car sort of in trade. And the friend in Texas needed some photographs of this car so he could try to get it up on his website and maybe sell it, even just get it going before it even reached Texas. So we went over to Neil's house, and we were tasked with taking photographs of his car. And as I was meeting him, trying to, you know, think of what to say and how much his music had meant to me over the years, and his prose writing as well. He was an incredible writer. I was slightly deer caught in the headlights moment, and he reached down to me from his, you know, whatever, 6'6", whatever, however tall he was, with a big hand, and he looked me in the eye and he said, "I'm a big fan of your work."
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, which I have to say is such a Neil thing to do, to sort of dissipate that kind of, one person being sort of above someone else in some way, and just kind of instantly make you peers. And he did that for me, which is a gift that I will never, ever forget. And it set us off on a course of actually, you know, being able to be friends. And and that took a while, but sort of once it happened, it really, really happened. I still get really choked up. He was there for me in ways that I can't even express.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that I showed up for him when he needed me, and I love him and I miss him every single day.
Yeah, I think. I mean, you obviously have a more personal, but I think anybody who's experienced his work or had the pleasure of reading the books, just a tremendous loss for all of us. And thank you for sharing that. And you know, as a Rush fan, you know, it's always just a little, you know, little piece missing. You know, that's one of the beauty of the vocation you're in, is that you leave a legacy behind you. You know, and we get to, you know, we can throw on 2112 anytime, you know, we need to. And And Lord knows we still do. But thank you for that.
My pleasure.
With the show you'll be doing here in Pittsburgh, I know obviously the 25th album of Everything You Want. Will you be doing the majority of the album, or is this, you know, kind of a front to back kind of thing, or just, you know, sprinkling in a little of the discography through all the years?
We'll certainly try and play as much of the record as we can, but we also want to make sure that we can play some songs from our other records.
Mm-hmm.
At least just to put songs out there that maybe some people really like from some of the other albums. Mm-hmm. And maybe expose people to a song or two that they hadn't heard before. But the primary focus for this tour, when we are headlining, is to really play as much of Everything You Want as we can.
Awesome. And I'd be remiss not to ask, obviously The Lost Mile came out, it's been 5-6 years now. Any thoughts to a follow-up to that?
Yeah, we're working on two new records right now.
Okay.
They are admittedly taking longer than I would have liked for them to have taken, but they, you know, that's one of the things about songwriting and art, is on some levels it takes as long as it takes.
Yeah.
And I found the pandemic period to be brutally unproductive for me as mm-hmm. a songwriter. I was, you know, my songs tend to focus on really little moments, really small interactions between mm-hmm. people, and we were dealing with a time of such enormous chaos and jeopardy, and my sort of little voice inside my head sort of was pretty quiet during that time. So now it's back to normal, and I know it's still even still has been a while.
Yeah.
Since the pandemic is kind of over, but it's okay. You know, it's just nice. I'm grateful at 54 years old to still have songs to write and still be excited to make records, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting. I mean, I think what you said about the productivity and the things that you write about, I mean, that's an important thing though, because I listen to, you know, I know, for example, like if you listen to the 2020 record from Bon Jovi, for example, very much in the moment, but sometimes it's a little hard to go back and listen to because of the moment we were in. You know, it was a great piece of art.
Yeah.
And I love the album, but it's not one that I, you know, when you're rolling down the windows, you don't want to listen to Unring the Bell, for example.
Right, sure.
If you're familiar with the song. But so it's, you know, I see where you're at with that. And like you said, you can't schedule creativity. Some people can miraculously do that. You know, you'll see artists that'll have 2-3 years laid out, including when they're going to write. I don't know that I would ever be that person.
Everybody's process is different. Mm-hmm. You know, I've learned a lot from Jerry Seinfeld in terms of his work ethos. He just talks about, you know, every day you just have to write. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter what it comes from. And Geddy Lee, the same. Geddy always says, all I need is 5 good minutes a day. And then if you're reaching for something that's as, frankly, as sort of small as 5 good minutes of work, what you wind up doing is you wind up doing 10 or 15 or 20 minutes of work or 45 good minutes of work. And then that sort of makes you feel like you're extra badass and productive. So I just try to put the pen to paper every day and have a guitar in my hands and try to continue to solve at some level these puzzles that are songs waiting to be written.
Yeah, perfect. Well, Matt, thank you very much. Again, you'll be in here on July 26th, make sure I got the date right, here in Pittsburgh to do a show. And we thank you so much for your time. We can't wait to see you when you get here, man.
Yeah, thanks so much for taking the time. And can I also just say really quickly how grateful I am to all of our friends and fans who continue to lift us up on their shoulders and take us on our journey. I mean, we can't do this without people like you sort of shouting about it from the rafters, or people who buy a T-shirt and help us put gas in the tank. Mm-hmm. I mean, this thing, you know, this career is not something that we deserve. This is a privilege. This is a gift that we are given, and we are given it by people like yourself and people like our friends and fans who support us. So that's the most important thing I just want to make sure I say to everyone out there is thank you very much for your support.
Beautiful. Thank you, Matt. We wish you safe travel, and we'll see you in just about, 4 weeks.
Sounds good. Awesome.
All right, again, South Park Amphitheater, Friday night, July 26th, Vertical Horizon, celebrating 25 years of the release of their seminal album. So I want to thank Matt so much for the time. And we're going to turn our attention to a man, who is playing a show, slightly different area of the city. He's playing at the Lamp Theater in Irwin on Friday night, Mr. Gary Hoey. Gary, obviously a fantastic guitar instrumentalist. I think everyone remembers, you know, obviously the Ho Ho Hoey series of albums and the blues album he did back in 2018. So we're going to get a chance to talk to him about what we can expect from a non-holiday Gary Hoey show. So without further ado, Mr. Gary Hoey. All right, ladies and gentlemen, my pleasure to welcome back to Iron City Rocks. We have Mr. Gary Hoey on the line. How you doing, Gary?
Doing great. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. We're going to be seeing you roll into the city of Pittsburgh, assuming you're not flying or trying to get anywhere in an airline. We'll see you this coming Friday night doing a show here in Pittsburgh, in Irwin at the Lamp Theater. So I wanted to touch base with you and see what you've been up to new music-wise. Please correct me if I'm wrong. The last album you had was Neon Highway Blues back kind of before COVID. Is that correct?
Yep, that's the last record, yeah.
So for folks coming out to see you, I think, you know, a lot of people in the Pittsburgh area have seen maybe your holiday show or a show, you know, fresh off the release of an album. But what kind of set list do you bring in with you this time around?
Oh, this time I'm basically doing a mixture of a lot of songs from my 22 album. You know, the hits, Hocus Pocus, mm-hmm. Low Rider, just lots of stuff from the blues records, some surf music. We're doing a couple songs off the forthcoming album called Avalanche, which will be coming out either this year or early next year. We still haven't got a release date, but mm-hmm. the new record's called Avalanche. So I'm playing some new songs in the show as well. And I've got Matt Starr on drums, amazing drummer who's played with Mr. Big and Fraley. And I've got a guy named Mike Ducko on bass, who's a really awesome bass player, younger guy from Berkeley, Berkeley graduate, who's been playing with me. So I got a great rhythm section, and we're really looking forward to it.
So the album Avalanche, can you give us a little sense of what to expect. You know, I think everyone is kind of familiar with some of the surf stuff. You mentioned the blue stuff. You've done the Christmas stuff. Like, where does this fall stylistically, or is it a bit of a hodgepodge?
The new record is kind of, it's more, I'd say, back to my rock, you know, to the rock roots. The last three albums, I was doing more of a blues, you know, blues rock, Neon Highway Blues, Deja Blues, and Dust and Bones, which was the first one I did with Mascot Records. So, yeah, so it's, this album, you know, it's interesting. We've all been through so much in the last few years between the COVID lockdown and everything, and bands, you know, not being able to tour. I also lost my mom a year ago, and my baby sister died of cancer. So it's been a crazy couple of years, and I was taking care of my mom for a couple of years through COVID, and after that, she was kind of, her health was failing. So I became her daily health provider and healthcare giver. So, you know, being a musician, I had the luxury of, you know, being able to come off the road a little bit and take care of my mom. I still did some touring. But I was focusing on her, which caused my album to get pretty delayed, but it was worth it for me. And then I had the album like three quarters done, John, and I woke up one day, I turned on my computer, and my hard drives, my external hard drives, had completely disappeared from the desktop. They were just gone. And in the middle of taking care of my mom, I wasn't backing up my album for some reason. My brain was just dead, and I wasn't taking care of my stuff. And so the albums had hard drives had a catastrophic failure, and I had to send them out to like a lab in Wisconsin that does stuff with the government. It was thousands of dollars, and they were able to retrieve like a half of the record. So I had to re-record a lot of the music and start almost over with a lot of the stuff. So it delayed it again, and it's just one thing after another. That's why I call the album Avalanche, because it just was like everything was coming down on me, and I felt like I couldn't breathe, you know.
Yeah, that's a lot. I mean, I think anyone who's, you know, of a certain age can kind of identify with the personal things going on in your life, you know, and then you're trying to work at the same time. And a lot of times it's so easy it's incredibly difficult to try to concentrate when you're dealing with things in your home life. It's probably not easy for you because you don't really have that division of home and work unless you're on the road, you know.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and it was, you know, I actually lost my mojo. Like at one point, I felt like I didn't even feel like a musician anymore. I kind of felt like I lost the mojo, the passion, whatever it was. I just didn't feel it anymore. And and then it came back. You know, I got it back, got that spirit back. And the new record, I wrote a song called Dear Mama, which is like a dedication to my mom.
Yeah.
And Avalanche was kind of a song about, I've been playing that song in the live show. And I have another song called You Know I Would, which is kind of like, you know, going back in your life and things that you wish you could change. And so it's kind of like, you know, I would if I could kind of thing in that song. And so the album came out with a lot of really heartfelt, passionate songs, things about survival and just, you know, being strong and staying positive. So I'm really excited for people to hear this record. I think it's just a collection of good songs, you know. It has a rock feel to it, but it's more about the songwriting than specifically like a one style all the way through. The album has some diversity to it, and I'm really excited for people to hear it, man. I think it's a really strong album, and I think I'll have it out. We might put it out before the end of the year, but I don't want to kind of get it all jammed up with my holiday tour, so I might just wait till the turn of the year to get it out and maybe release a couple singles. We just shot a video for one of the songs. We just did a music video, so we may just kind of put out some singles until the record's ready.
Yeah, it's kind of a anybody's guess on how you would go about releasing musically effectively anymore. Question: when you lost the material that you had recorded, you know, you said you got some of it back, but when you went through and kind of approached the stuff that was lost, was it hard to kind of capture it as you remember? Do you think you did it better? Do you lose some of the spontaneity, or do you just kind of rework the parts, you know? I'm assuming you didn't chart out everything you were doing at that point in the recording process.
Right. No, I didn't. I had some rough mixes of some of the stuff that I lost. Like I had some sort of rough board mixes. So I kind of still, you know, had some of the ideas of what was going on, or like some of the songs, I'd only have like a bass track and a drum. I'd lose all the guitars and the vocals. So some of it, when the data company retrieved it, they would retrieve like some of the files, but not all the files. So I was able to reassemble some of it. But I have to say, you know, it's weird. Maybe in some ways, I think it came out better because I was able to go back at it and do it again and have a little more of a passion because I think emotionally I was in a better place. And I think everything happens for a reason. And I also said, man, I'm going to do it even better this time. I'm not going to let it get me down. And some of the songs I actually think came out better because I had to go in and redo them. And I had a little more of a chance to get it the way I wanted. And, so I'm looking at it as a crazy blessing.
Yeah, it kind of harkens back to the days where you had to bake the tapes to try to salvage things, you know, and some of the, yeah. it's like a 21st century version of razor blades and ovens to save magnetic tapes. So now you're dealing with discs and stuff. So lesson to everybody, back up and back up your backup because it can bite everybody.
Exactly.
So for those of that are going to come out to see you, you're going to have some of the CDs and DVDs and stuff like that that people like to get their hands on. I know I'd done an order myself through your website, but it's always cool when a band comes into town. Do you guys kind of bring some merch with you?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for the support. We do. We have a lot of my prior records will be available, and also we'll have, you know, some merchandise. Like we because we're in between albums, we printed up some new shirts and new hats that are more of a, we kind of did like an army green and a patriotic sort of way of doing my logo with the red, white, and blue. Summertime's here, you know, I'm a patriot. I always end my show playing the national anthem, and I do a tribute to all the veterans. And my brother was in the army, my nephew went to Afghanistan, all my uncles were policemen when I was growing up, so I like to honor the first responders and the police. So I do that in my show. And and then we always come out after the show and talk to fans and just do like a free meet and greet at the tape merch area. We hang out with people and talk to them, sign stuff, do photos and all that. So I like to meet everybody after the show and get a chance to thank them for coming out.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I have to admit the Ho Ho Hoey live in Lowell is part of my, you know, kind of holiday tradition along with the Twisted Sisters Christmas DVD, and It's a Wonderful Life. You know, kind of a odd ritual of when I watch those, you know, it's kind of like gift wrapping and put it on the TV and do that kind of thing and watch you tear it up in Lowell every year. So it'll be a pleasure to see you, you know, in person, and we look forward to you coming into town, man, this weekend. And I wish you a safe trip, and if you're flying, get to the airport early, man.
Yes. Yeah, we're I think we're driving because I have a show in Michigan and Illinois, and I think we might be driving in to see you guys after one of the shows. I think we might be driving in for that one.
That's a smart man there. Well, I wish you safe travel, and we will see you this weekend, man.
Thank you so much, John. I'll see you then, brother. All the best. Take care.
Jeff Lynn's ELO.
Mr. Blue Sky, please tell us why.
Live in concert in Pittsburgh. The Over and Out Tour. Jeff Lynn's ELO. The final tour. All the hits. Live at PPG Paints Arena, September 10th. Get tickets now at Ticketmaster.com.
All right, a big thank you to Gary Hoey. Again, Lamp Theater, Friday, July 26th. You can still get tickets at the Lamp Theater's website. We'll have a link on our website as well. And also, you don't need tickets to come see Vertical Horizon on the same night, 26th of July, at the South Park Amphitheater. What you do need to do is probably start getting there about the time you listen to this. Because I imagine you will need a shoehorn to get people into that venue for that show. So it's going to be a crowded one. The weather should be great. So make sure you get yourself there early. And again, that's the 25th anniversary of Everything You Want, a song that I think everyone kind of has heard to the point where it's in your DNA, you know, unless you lived in a bubble. So it'd be cool to see those guys coming into town as well. I want to thank you guys for listening. www.ironcityrocks.com. You can get information for both these shows, directions, ticket information for the Gary Howie Show as well, as well as links to the band's pages, etc. You can drop us an email, ironcityrocks@gmail.com, with anything you'd like to suggest, artists we may have not covered since we started doing this back in 2009, artists that maybe you're tired of hearing about, genres of music that maybe you'd like to hear more of. Do you like more of that 90s, 80s, 90s, 2000s alt rock? Do you like a little more metal? Let us know. Love to hear from you guys. What are you interested in hearing about? We'd love to know. You can check us out on all the social medias, our Iron City Rocks, and we want to thank you for taking the time to follow us. We're doing ticket giveaways all through the summer for shows, and keep checking back for new episodes as we feature the bands that will be coming into Pittsburgh. We've got a very special episode coming up very soon for all you metalheads. So if we went a little less metal on this episode, we will promise we will make it up with a very soon coming episode. So thank you so much for taking the time to listen.